Well, what was... What?
Now, wait a minute.
Yeah,
I have a connection to all of that as well.
Tell me.
My first wife, Sheila Wells, who knew everybody, and she introduced me to a lot of the people that are in your book.
I remember
people.
Sheila, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
I think I met her.
And she's around still. She's been very kind to me since I lost my dear wife, Melinda. But the night of the murders, Sharon Tate, who was her best friend and roommate for a while, was supposed to come to her house for dinner. And when Jay Sebring called and said, I'm coming into town, and about so they decided to go out to dinner and then come back to the house. And Sharon called Sheila and said, why don't you come and join us later? And Sheila said, well, you know, I have another friend coming for dinner, so I'll call you afterwards. When she called afterwards, the lines were down. She called Sharon's dad, the colonel, and he said, yeah, there's cops up there. We don't know what's going on. That would have saved Sharon and her baby's life.
God help us.
Fate. Isn't it amazing?
Amazing. It's just amazing. Sliding doors, closing doors that you just missed in a subway or a stairwell. It's just... how close things are sometimes to one way or another, those horrible murders. And, you know, it's a crazy story to have met them and smoked a joint with them, but the bad vibes that I seemed to be surrounded with back then when I found in my trash can and plugging my car in.
There's a story. Listen to this.
Oh, my God, yeah.
You're plugging your car in, and there's a terrible stench coming out of your garbage cans, right?
Actually, the plugging the car is another one that Cato Kaelin showed me where to plug my car in. I'll tell you more about that.
Okay.
But the one with the stench was my neighbor from across the alleyway came to my door and knocked and said, I think your cat has passed away because I think she died under the house. I said, there's my cat right there. She was rubbing up against my leg. Oh, yeah. There's something very bad under the house. We looked under there. It wasn't coming from under the house. It was in my trash can. Yeah. So I opened the lid. I closed it right away because it looked like somebody must have hit a dog or something, a big dog, and put it in the trash can because they must have hit it or dog. I don't know what happened,
sure.
But there's something horrible in there. So I go to the bank and come back. And now there's a whole bunch of police photographers and detectives and
Police cars
and everything. And the stench is terrible. And I finally go and I look over the fence to see, what is that there? What do they have there? It looks like a saddle or something or some sort of leather. Oh, my God, it's a torso. Oh, my God, two arms, two legs.
And a head.
And a head. All of that is right there in the alley between me and my neighbor. And I'm going, what happened to this poor young girl that she was taken from her mother's arms to wind up in my trash can? What is the story behind this? And I never learned that story, sadly.
No, you can't. You can't learn everything. But also, Jeff Goldblum, one of the times that we met was in New York for the Macy's fireworks display. Don't know if you remember this.
Yes, I do.
You and Jeff had just come back from shooting Transylvania 5000.
In Yugoslavia, when there was a Yugoslavia.
Yes, right. And we said hello and got to, you know, to hug one another before the place blew up, you know, at the show. Jeff was held at gunpoint on your front lawn?
My front lawn. He was coming by to play. We would either play Risk or we would play Monopoly.
Risk.
This night it was Risk or Monopoly.
That's appropriate.
He was coming in. He wasn't there, and he was late. People didn't have cell phones back then. So finally, Jeff calls me. He says, I'm in the neighborhood. I went to one of your neighbor's houses. What? Why aren't you here? Why? Because it happened, and something. I didn't know what he was talking about. Finally, I got enough out of him. Somebody had come up and held him at gunpoint and taken his wallet and his car keys and driven his car away right in my front.
What neighborhood were you living in?
I lived in Larchmont Village, a very nice area.
That's a nice area.
Yeah, very nice. And so I
thought,
what kind of energy am I putting out in the universe that I'm plugging my car in at O.J. Simpson's house in the wall where Cato Kaelin heard the thumps? You know, why am I finding bodies in my trash?
Go back to Cato and O.J.?
Well, O.J. was a friend of mine before he started murdering people. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know him very well, but I would be invited to a party at his house regularly. You know, I'd go to his house and have a nice time at a party, and I'd say, I'm running a little low on power. Can I get a little charge? He said, yeah, go plug in near the wall there. Cato will show you. So I'd plug in my car in the wall where Cato would show me and get a charge and go home. And then pretty soon we learned more about that wall and Cato and everything and the thumps that we heard. And the first few days, everybody like me was thinking, oh, please, say it ain't so.
Yeah.
I can't believe a guy that we all love so much is capable of something like that.
One of the other people who was born in July is the infamous O.J. Simpson.
A lot of fun, man. He killed.
I love that show, The Simpsons.
Yeah.
That's great.
In honor, in recognition of O.J.'s birth, I would like to present a poem, O.J. Obviously jealous old jock, overly juiced, off-hours junkie, ornery, jazzed.
Overheard jabbering, outside, June.
Ominous jawing, offensive jamming.
Uh-oh, jeopardy.
Overpowering jabs, on target, jagged, one-on-one.
Just overkill, jeez.
Odious justification.
Obscene Jezebel, Occidental Jew.
Obituaries,
joint.
Odd joyride, overexposed journey.
Outlaw jacketed, obedient jailbird.
Oriental judge.
Ordinary jury.
Only jerks.
Oscillating jurist.
Obdurate Jeanette.
Outrageous jargon, overtime jumbo.
Objection.
Justified.
Oath sworn Joneses.
Obfuscating jesters.
Obtuse jousters.
Obsequious jugglers.
Others, jackasses. Obese jawmen. Officer Judas.
O.J. Jamboree.
Overwrought journalists.
Overrated jackals.
Option, junction.
Off.
Jail.
Overlooked jurisprudence.
Our justifications outweigh judgment.
Justice.
Overruled.
O.J.'s out.
Jesus.
Ouch.
Joke.
But when it came out about her strong box in the bank, you know, her safety deposit box and the Polaroid she had taken of herself. It was a spousal abuse case, the whole thing.
Abused, right.
Yeah. And she wondered, she was afraid that something like this might happen, and sadly it did. Mm. Terrible, terrible.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And again, an innocent person with her was
exactly.
also slaughtered.
Ron Goldman, the wonderful Ron Goldman. I know his family a bit. I've gotten to know them. Wonderful people. I can't imagine losing a son like that.
Fate.
I know.
It's just, it's incredible.
I mean, when you look back to Los Angeles in the 60s and early 70s even, I mean, you tell these stories and it just seems like the Wild West. I mean, what was, if you could go back and just sort of distill what L.A. was as it in your eye.
Yeah, and talk about when you were married to Ingrid, your first wife.
Yes.
And you moved to, what's that beautiful area?
Ojai, beautiful Ojai.
Oh, no, not that. Down in L.A.
Oh, Hancock Park?
Hancock Park.
Yeah.
Because that's where you, in your book, you describe a lot of crime was happening there.
By the way, we're speaking with Ed Begley, Jr., actor, environmentalist, and rock auteur.
And he's telling wonderful stories from his book, The Temple of Tranquility, and Step on It. And he is the book is as entertaining as Ed is right now talking with us. It's like a conversation reading this book.
It is with you guys. But L.A. back then was like a Philip Marlowe, you know, Dashiell Hammett kind of a thing that you see on the page. The jacaranda and the smell of the, you know,
orange
different
trees
plants and the orange trees, exactly, right. The orange blossoms. It's just a beautiful place to live with all this dark underbelly that's going on as well that nobody knows about. And I certainly flirted with it. I had some encounters with it. But I now for many years have been leading a life of a lot of light and love and a different kind of existence, having steered clear of some of the negativity that put me in these situations in many cases.
Well, the fact that you were able still, even when you were inundated with addiction, you still...
strong will.
Remarkably, I think you always had the light, obviously. It saved you so many times.
It did. And throughout all that addiction, in the early 70s, I discovered the work of Alan Watts, a great writer and philosopher.
Oh, yes.
And so Alan Watts' book, This Is It, got to me at some point. I realized just from the cover, wait a minute, this is it. It's happening right now. It's not going to get better when I do the job or fix my transmission or get the paycheck or whatever. I think it's going to be better, like I did as a kid. It's going to be great when I get the train set or the chemistry set. Everything's going to be wonderful when that happens. But it's happening right now. It's not something that happens later.
That's an interesting
the future
transition in one's life is when everything's ahead of me. Don't worry. It's going to be fine. It's going to be fine until the point where you realize, wait a minute, I'm there.
I'm responsible.
And you finished your book that way, saying, you know, try to do this. Try to live in the moment.
Right now, because that's all there is. I remember another turning point for me was in the early 80s. I was going up with my first wife, Ingrid, to go up to Monterey, beautiful Monterey. And boy, I wanted to get there, Ted, because it's so beautiful up there. Mm-hmm. We're in L.A. It was a smoggy day in the 80s, and I wanted to get up there. And she hadn't packed the trunk right. I was taking out the different, you know, suitcases, putting them in right, and kind of berating her for why she didn't pack them right. And I realized, and I think she even guided me in that direction, it wasn't going to start. The vacation didn't start in Monterey. It started right now in the driveway, right here, this moment, like the one I'm enjoying with you, Ted. This is it. Mm-hmm. It's not later. This is not a dress rehearsal with Phil and me. This is happening right now. in this moment. It's kind of beautiful to see an old friend like you and have a new friend like you. And it can be gorgeous if you let it.
Yep. Now, you had...
you said it.
You started a charmed beginning because you were on one of my all-time favorite TV shows, Mary Hartman.
Oh, I love that show,
And you
too.
Played a deaf person.
Right, yeah, I did.
I had to learn ASL every day. I didn't know how to do American Sign Language, but there was a woman there who taught me.
I remember you doing that.
Bless your heart. Today it wouldn't cut mustard at all. You should have a person who really knows how to do it well, preferably even a person
who is really deaf. Asking.
Exactly.
Of course.
What was that experience like? That, I mean, because it was a break for you, and you got to be friends with these incredible people, including
Louise Lasser, Mary Kay Place,
Dabney Coleman, Fred Willard.
Yep.
I forgot that Fred was on that show.
Oh, Fred was... Well, he was on America Tonight and Fernwood Tonight.
Fernwood, yes, that's right.
Of course.
Very few times in my life can I ever remember falling out of my chair laughing. And Fred Willard was one of those
me
people.
Me too. He was had the same effect on me.
Oh, my God.
And me.
Yeah. You know, and I met... You know, I became friends with Edie McClurg years later.
Oh, I love Edie McClurg. You have good friends, Ted.
Yeah. And I said we were working on something, and I had hired Fred to do a bit. And before I met him... Well, we did the show, and we did the bit, and he came in, and he was very straightforward, nice guy, very quiet, left. And I was a little, like, thrown by that, and I said to Edie, I said, is because I didn't know who he was. I didn't know him. I said, is Fred one of those people who is just so remarkably funny but doesn't know it? Because that's how he kind of came off to me. And then Edie said, oh, no, dear. Fred knows exactly what he's doing.
I would agree with that.
So true.
But wow, what a talent.
Do you ever see Edie McClurg, by the way?
I haven't seen her about a year ago.
Yeah. Give her my love if
I
you
sure
do see
will.
Her. She
I
did me a great
will.
Favor back in 1980 or thereabouts before I got St. Elsewhere. I bought a house. And I couldn't quite make the payment, so I reverted to my carpentry skills. I did some carpentry work. She had me build a little unit in her bathroom.
Oh.
She kept me busy and working and fed my family in the early 80s. So thank you, Edie McClurg.
Oh, wow. You and Harrison Ford.
Oh, I'm nothing like a master carpenter like him. He's a real deal. Bill Macy. There's another master carpenter.
Bill Macy?
Bill
really?
Macy.
A wonderful
William
carpenter.
Macy. Wow.
And Harrison is just incredible.
Well, you know, Harrison Ford was our dope dealer in the Firesign Theater days.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
When you lived in the commune in the commune.
I didn't live there.
In Barham, on Barham.
But, yeah. The farm. It was called The Farm. And Charles Manson visited there, by the way.
Peter Bergman lived there.
Peter Bergman.
Oh, God, I miss Peter.
Mm, yeah.
So
and
Phil
Steven Spielberg lived there for a little while, too. And Jack Poet lived there.
Oh.
The Firesign Theater, by the way, just a brief little break here on non-commercial radio. Firesign Theater is releasing a 72-page online booklet about our commercial years and our Jack Poet television commercials.
For the Volkswagen.
And they're all included, right. He had a Volkswagen dealership. You're a poet in your poet car. And it's called I Love Jack Poet Loves You. All right, and you'll be able to get it online at the Firesign Theater website on February the 6th. And it's got all of these radio commercials we did for Carnation Instant Breakfast and Alaska Airlines, by the way.
Pizza Hut.
So anyway, I guess I bring this up because...
Because I wanted to know about it because I'm going to get it. That's why you brought it up.
There you go.
So Mary Hartman, that sort of... Did that sort of launch things?
It did. It really did. Because before that, I was a guy with three lines here, four lines there.
Yeah.
But with Mary Hartman, I was on a wonderful, successful show that people watched, critically acclaimed show that, you know, people loved. And I was on it with Louise Lasser and Dabney Coleman and Mary Kay Place.
What a cast.
And then you became...
Involved with the wonderful Mary Kay. I'm so lucky to have gone out with her.
Place or yours.
Yeah. Oh, God. In all those years, I never thought of that. That's right there in front of me. He's always got the greatest.
Yeah,
she is the greatest. It is the greatest. I haven't talked to her in a few weeks now, maybe even months. I got to call her.
Oh, man.
She was great on that show. She's great
best.
In everything. Did you see that movie she did about like some steel town in Pittsburgh that's fallen on hard times and her son's addicted to opiates or something? Oh, God, it just came out a few years ago. She's breathtaking. And I'll get you the information, Ted, so you can watch it. She's just brilliant in that, as she is in everything.
Boy, we'd love to have her here if she'd like to come on the
show. One of the things that actors can identify with in your story is the fact that you'd be working but it wasn't really paying the bills, and it wasn't really leading to anything important. And you had reached the point where, which many of us got to, where you said, honey, to your wife, you had two kids at that time.
Yes.
Too. You said, let's move to Atlanta.
Yep.
It's not working for me here. I'll be a big fish in a small pond. And Adam, you weren't exactly sure. Maybe you'd be a weatherman on local television.
It's unbelievable that you remember all this. That's
absolutely
correct.
Oh, I do, because things like this have happened to me.
Sure.
As you read in my book. And the phone rang, and it was your agent, and you had a reading for this movie, for this show, Saint Something Another.
Right.
And you went in, didn't get the part.
Right.
But they liked you, and they brought you back in another part. All those stories in the book, by the way, I'm just making a shorthand of it, but they're absolutely wonderful. And you get to know the people that you worked with. Well, we did St. Elsewhere together.
Yes, we did.
Turned into a 6-year job view is what I'm trying to say. We did it together, but my part was cut out of the show for time.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Austin Pendleton was on that show, too.
He sure was. I loved him.
And I was the MC introducing him to do some stand-up or something. I forget. I do remember that you were playing a drunk.
Yes.
And you had a little device to blow on your eyes.
Yeah, menthol. It was some menthol.
Menthol to give you that...
That red-eyed look.
That red-eyed look.
Huh.
I stumped into the Last Chance Saloon.
I'm a handsome yogan and a party boy.
Hey, give me some more of that third red eye, Bucky.
You've had it. That's your last chance, cowboy. Out.
That's acting, folks.
And
that's wonderful that you remember that.
Even,
oh, I remember
but,
it very
but
well.
Again, your luck. I mean, this is apart from show business. You're down having breakfast on your way to LAX to fly out, and Cesar Chavez,
I know,
walks in, and you go up and talk to him.
I know.
And then you, of course, with like everyone, you become friends.
Become friends with him because I just wanted to meet him in person. I'd supported the grape boycott, the lettuce boycott. Mm-hmm. You know, when he said, stop buying this stuff, I was with him. You know, no lechuga, no uvas.
Yeah, let us stop.
Exactly.
Right.
And so I helped them. There was a strike fund that I gave some money to. So, but that was all from a distance. And here he is before me. I couldn't not say hello. Went up, you know, right after they ordered the food and before it arrived, so I wasn't bothering them, him and his friend Irv, and said, Mr. Chavez, I'm sorry to bother you, but I just want to give you my card. If I can ever be of help, let me know. I've been a supporter for years. And he took the card. He said, well, what's your passion? I said, you know, the environment. I care a good deal about the environment. He said, well, as I'm sure you know, it's not just saving the whales and saving the owls. It's the people, too. He said, I know very well. You know, you got those kids that are getting sick in the cancer clusters in McFarland and Earlemart, kids like Mario Bravo and the Cadillo family. And, and he couldn't believe that I knew about that. He said, oh, my God, we're going to be friends a long time. And we were just that. And I had the sadness and the honor of carrying his coffin through the streets of Delano in 1993. But I had some good and productive and wonderful years with him working on important issues like pesticide use and abuse.
The grapes are dying, man, and we are moving south.
Yeah, no, the Grape Society, remember that LBJ tried? Didn't pass it, man. Got squeezed. They got squeezed out of the Grape Society.
Cesar Chavez, man, he ended that whole thing.
Hey,
man.
But it's a day. Yeah. Do you know that they have Cesar Chavez Day here in California?
Yeah. Oh, I'd celebrate that, man.
I would indeed. How would you celebrate? It's striking.
Eat some lettuce, man.
Maybe how about
have a Caesar salad?
No. I have a documentary made about myself.
Oh yeah,
right. Yeah. Joan Baez. And
hey, you
Bob
know what you
Dylan,
do? You'd order a Caesar salad and then say, "I'm not going to eat it," and throw it on the floor.
That's good, man.
All right,
that's
good.
A refusnik.
Yeah. Well, you know, just make.
Well,
it
nobody eats
point,
lettuce
you know?
Anymore anyway because a lettuce and a frog shall lead them. Remember that?
That's right.
Yeah. Ever since the lettuces and the frogs got together,
just make it a political point, man. Is that the way you make a political point? You throw your salad on the floor, man.
Yeah.
This is when you upscale Beverly Hills restaurant, man.
Oh,
he's just a famous
to
star
to.
In the corner.
Yeah,
man.
That's
I'm gonna
right.
throw my salad on the floor. See what you think, famous star, man.
Now you get it.
And the waiter's going, "Oh, he's in the Partner Sign Theater. His wife told me."
Yeah. He slipped me $10 with his name on it. This is from Phil Proctor.
Give him the free day-old dessert.
Yeah, okay, all right. Right in his head. Right.
And what I never knew Gandhi. I never knew Dr. King. I never knew Mother Teresa. But I knew him, and he was a leader of that ilk.
But you knew Tutu.
I did know Desmond, and work a bit with Desmond Tutu. Desmond Tutu. He had a wonderful organization that Alfred Woodard put me in touch with in the 80s, and we did something to help people in South Africa. I can't remember the name of it now, but I helped, you know, financially and in other ways with that great organization, and got to meet Desmond Tutu repeatedly at these different events. So how lucky am I to be around a person of that ilk?
Oh, it's just, it's amazing.
Blessed.
I mean, you know, here you are, an actor, right, trying to make a living as an actor.
Right.
And when you read your book, you will see that you have touched and been touched by so many extraordinary people. It must be a magnetism.
Yes.
You know, you were talking about attracting bad things to yourself, you know, and then suddenly you were attracting good things to
yourself.
I think
you're just generally attractive.
Because you cleaned up your act.
That's
so
true, but I was touched. I think my next book will be called Touched by an Agent.
Harry Anderson said that his son called that show Touched by an Uncle.
You had an interesting relationship with Marlon Brando.
I did.
That the repartee between the two of you, he was a funny guy.
Very funny guy. He was, you know, he loved a good practical joke.
There's somebody out there, a Marlon Brando or some crazy Indian who's just using the interstate for a shoot-up gallery, if you know what I mean.
He would call up people sometimes, put on an accent, and try to wind them up, and quite successfully. He was a ham radio operator, too, so he'd be different people to different individuals around the world.
Oh, you know, sure. Did he do his Kurtz impression from Apocalypse Now on the ham?
He probably did.
I'm like a snail walking on the edge of a...
That's exactly right. Big nuts. This is Brand Flakes. Give me a shout. There's a project I want to do with you. I've got all the financing. We've got the distribution in place, and we should have collaborated years ago, so it's time. I've got this production. Let's get it going.
So you heard what I just said. Production,
yeah.
He's got the financing.
So you
got distribution.
And for once, you didn't bicycle up the hill to impress him.
I did not. I ran up there. I drove up there quickly in my car because I didn't want him to give it to Sean Penn while he's waiting for me to get up there on my bike. So I got up there, and I saw what I'd seen every time on my bike, big lettering in the garage that says, stay in your car, honk your horn. The reason for that was he had these massive dogs, I mean, big enough to ride dressage, these huge dogs. But I knew them well, so I just put my head down to offer them my neck to make sure they knew I was a supplicant before them. And they came up to me and licked me, and then I walked with them alongside the pool, this pool that was green with algae. Careful not to slip in, because if those gunite walls could talk, I can only imagine how that pool got in that condition. So I sat down for my meeting with him about this project we're going to do together. So I wasn't sure who would start, so he starts off with,
do you know how many volts an electric eel puts out?
I went, I don't know exactly how many, but I'm sure a couple hundred volts, but not a lot of current. And just for a second, this is why you're perfect for this project. So I'm thinking, it's something in the sea. We're going to do aquatic acting together underwater. I didn't know he was a diver. I'm a licensed paddy diver.
Oh,
it's going to be great.
No, he said, what's the name of the town down the coast?
The town down the coast? I mean, below Santa Monica? Well, there's Manhattan Beach, Seal Beach, Huntington Beach, La Jolla. That's it, La Jolla, the Scripps Institute. You and Joe Bretzman are going to go down there. You're going to get 70 of them. You're going to bring them back here. 70 what? Electric eels, for God's sake. We're going to run every home in America. Thought, is he winding me up now? Is he having fun with me like he does with the ham radio people? No, Marlon, how are you going to harness? Harness being an appropriate term in this case.
Yeah.
Like a little cartoon seahorse. How are you going to harness with wires twisted around in 5 minutes, twisted to shit? How are you going to get the power from the electric eel, which, by the way, is only for a fraction of a second when they've done something. Then they're out of juice for another 8 hours or whatever the hell it is.
Yeah, like me.
Very nice.
Sorry.
And so... he said, why is everything no with you? You're always so negative, for God's sake. Try to say yes for something once in a while. So he said, here's the next thing. You got to say yes to this. Do you still have your wind turbine? I said, I do. How would you like to increase the capacity by 100%? That sounds pretty good, Marlon. What do you have in mind? He said, give me a piece of paper. And he started drawing this picture of looked like a cornucopia with the end cut off, or a hearing horn, or like a funnel. What's that, Sonny? He had... Yeah. And so he said, we're going to put this in front of your wind turbine. I looked at the napkin. I looked at him. I said, is this to scale? He said, yeah. So I got a little ruler measured somehow. And I looked at it. And I said, that would make this funnel, this thing that you're – it would be like 400 feet high and made out of what, by the way? You know what that's going to cost? And also, by the way, it's going to tear down my wind turbine because they're only designed to take 40 knots or something worth of wind. Then they shut down. They flatten out the blades so the wind can pass through because the pad and the structure won't take it.
Yeah.
They only design them for what 363 days a year blows past them. Good use of resources, actually.
Why is everything no with you? Everything is always no, for God's sake.
But it wasn't no all the time. He came up with, Dr. Craven, this wonderful thing with deep ocean water cooling to cool different resorts in the tropics. And it worked very well, and it's in use today in Bora Bora and other places.
Well, we're out of time.
No!
You have to come back and talk about Jack Nicholson.
Former President Nixon.
I'm not Billy Jacking you either.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, appearing tonight for the second time before this distinguished crowd. Excuse me, something got into my nose backstage, apparently. Thank you. Still alive. After 20 years on the blacklist, Hollywood's Wonder Kid, the legendary George L. Tirebiter.
Thank you, Bert. And thank you, Jack. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for the gift of recognition by today's nostalgic, well-dressed young people.
Yes.
Happy to do it. I love that movie.
Yeah, I did The Safe Place, Henry Jaglom's first movie with Jack.
You sure did.
And he has a real relationship with it, too. Oh, man.
Man, you know,
I know so many people in your book. It's mind-blowing.
And they know you and they love you, by the way.
Oh, well, that's very sweet. I love working with all of them or knowing them. But anyway, you come back,
like it or not.
You got lots of stars.
Our guest today, Ed Begley Jr., and boy, you know everybody. You know everybody.
It's wonderful.
Between the two of us, we know everybody.
Unbelievable.
Plus.
His book, a memoir, To the Temple of Tranquility and Step on It. You can find it everywhere you buy books.
Yeah, so step on it and go get it, folks.
Thank you so much, Ed. Thank you so much.
Ted, thank
you. Such a pleasure
Phil,
to reconnect with you, my friend.
Love you.
Phil, next week, same time,
Shadow Stevens.
Shadow Stevens.
That'll be fun, too.
Yeah. Okay.
Give him my best.
Everybody.
Take care.
Keep listening.